sick of listening to your shit. Shut the fuck up.
If you're a heckler, shut up. If you're a hater, shut up. If you ain't holding the mic, then shut the fuck up. Fuck boy, shut up. Fake friends, shut up. If you ain't about growth, then shut the fuck up. Negrophobia, shut up. All lives matter, shut up. White man with a forked tongue, shut the fuck up. Victim blamer, shut up. Uncaring, shut up. If you're worthy to our benefit, shut the fuck up. Liar, liar, shut up. Wolf crier, shut up. When grown folks are talking young and shut the fuck up. You a traitor, shut up. Manipulator, shut up. Real friends know the time to shut the fuck up. Wrong preacher, shut up. Wicked preacher, shut up. If you ain't got any answers, hey, shut the fuck up. Interrupter, shut up. Obstructor, shut up. If you ain't holding the peace pipe, shut the fuck up. Hey, 2021. Yes, I'm stalling to say welcome to another episode. Excuse me. Okay, come on. Officer, come in full. Welcome, bienvenue to another episode of Shut Up Podcast. I am your host, B Black, a.k.a. B Blizzak on Twitter, a.k.a. Mr. ShutUpPodcast.com on the web. By the way, FYI, this podcast is protected by the red, the black, and the green, and also waves a red, black, and a red, blue flag. Rouge et bleu is up in this bitch. I'm representing and holding it down for black folks that grew up in the 80s watching TV Ontario, Télé-Québec, and Soul in the City on Much Music. This episode is being recorded on a Sunday, September 11, 2022. Yes, we remember. And brought to you by the letter FW. FW for Fuck Whitey. Fuck Whitey as a staff, record label, and as a motherfucking crew. And if you want to be down with Whitey, then fuck you too. Oh, what's that? I'm sorry. Excuse me. Mr. Soundboard, what's that? What's going on? I'm a little too high on the volumes. And that's probably because I'm talking directly into the microphone as opposed to having it on the side. Yes, that's right, people. I'm talking to a machine right now. And I'm just trying to figure out why it's tripping. Okay. All right. Yeah. There we are. Okay. What a week. No, I'm not going to have a memorial for September 11th. We know what it's all about. Watch CNN. You know what I mean? Fuck it. I'm going to stop myself before I say something insensitive. But what I will talk about in this episode is TLS. Transport Layer. Fuck. What does TLS? There's SSL, Secure Socket Layer, and then TLS stands for Transport Layer Security. All right, okay. What does that have to do with anything? No, I'm fucking with you, man. For those of you who don't know, I've been working in IT, and I've been troubleshooting a problem this week, and it involves TLS, and it involved me watching a lot of YouTube videos on fucking TLS, because in order for me to fix the problem, I have to understand the cause or how it's supposed to work. Yeah, there was supposed to be a preacher. There was supposed to be a sermon in that shit, but yeah, that was unsuccessful. All right, there's a lot of topic I'm trying to get to, but if I had to summarize my week, like, I don't know if you've seen, like, when you watch a show and someone does a recap by showing a bunch of pictures that's relevant to the show, but to the people who haven't watched it, it's not a spoiler. You just see four images, and the people, so it's like an inside joke. Yeah. So you'll see four pictures, and it all relates to events, things that happen in this particular episode. So the people who watched it will laugh and be like, ha, and have those chuckles. And the people who haven't watched it will be like, what the fuck are they talking about? So if I had to summarize my week, it would be TLS, the title of this episode, which I haven't figured out what it's going to be yet, but it's definitely going to be related to Queen Latifah, and, oh, right, the decision to the titles, because I might call this episode Just Another Day, or
infinity to infinity, or your queen is dead. I haven't figured it out. It's one of those three. It's going to be one of those three, and whatever, by the end of this episode, whatever the spirit moves me, is going to be the title for this episode. Right. All right. So let's start out with your queen is dead. So I believe it was on Friday. What day was it? Where was I when I heard the news? I was at work, and one of my colleagues just in a group chat just put out that queen is dead. And I was like, what queen? I'm kidding. No. I mean, it was expected that she was at that age. And I remember writing a message of saying, I'm surprised, but I'm not surprised. That was my way of saying, like, you know, she's kind of old, you know. I guess I should start up by saying, like, if the fuck you, fuck Whitey wasn't hit enough, that this is not the podcast to listen to if you're one of those people grieving the passing of Queen Elizabeth. All due respect. Yeah, this is not the podcast. I'm on the side of, like, I've been thinking a lot about, like, I'm on the side of the majority. This is what I've been thinking about a lot about, is do we live in a world where all of us need to just accept the fact, just swallow it up. It's like, shut the fuck up. Accept the fact that we live in this cruel world where a minority get to live happily ever after, get to have more enjoyable lives at the cost of a majority who they have to have like a shitty life, a struggle. Like their life has to be so fucking difficult. Like, I gotta be one of those. Is it Congo? One of the countries. I'm not sure. I think it was Kenya. I think it's Kenya. Basically, one of the countries England fucked over. I remember hearing, you know, shit like crushing the testicles of rebels who just wanted what any human being would want: their independence for their country, and the rebels. And England, well, the soldiers, whatever the fuck, the rulers, they decided to punish those rebels, not by talking to them about Jesus, but by doing shit, by torturing them. And one of those tortures was crushing their testicles. So, I mean, I'm just saying, what I was thinking about is, if we live in a world where I'm the one who's the fucking idiot, I'm the one who's the little pussy who just needs to accept the fact that in order for me to be happy, someone out there has to fucking suffer. So if that's the case, then I'm going to take back all the shitty things I said about the queen. But if we do live in a world where, it sucks, I can admit that it sucks that a majority of human beings are suffering so I can have a fucking iPod, or I can talk shit on the internet, or I'm saying me. I'm not even talking about white people with privilege here. I feel just as guilty living in it. Like, I'm trying to make sense of my life where I understand I have it a lot better than a lot of human beings, probably a majority of the human beings on this fucking planet. I'm trying to come to terms with that shit. I'm grateful, don't get me wrong. But I don't like the fact that someone out there is like, like famine, like going through famine and shit. You know what? The closest thing I've ever come to famine, to experiencing famine, was this one time my doctor, he asked me to fast for 12 hours. 6 hours, I was fucking complaining. I was 6 hours, I was dying. I was like bitching. Some people, famine is their fucking existence. Have been that existence. Like, some of the atrocities that the English have committed on, for what, at, you know, just to be, I guess, the motherfuckers on the top, or whatever the fuck, whatever. And some of the cruelties they've, like, that, you know what? Okay, I'm not gonna do this. What I'm trying to bring up is Queen Elizabeth is dead, and there's been a lot of controversy, or there's been a range of emotions about her legacy. So instead of me fucking it up, I'm going to play a clip. Go to your notes. I'm going to play a clip. A TikTok clip by sister, I believe she's Haitian. Yeah, she's Haitian. Her name is Bertrude. She's Haitian, so it must be pronounced in French. Bertrude Albert, PhD. Anyways, and she summarizes very well. She summarizes perfectly, and we'll move on. I guess it would help if I, you know, hit the mute button. Just a second.
Elizabeth II passed away this afternoon, and I offer my sincere condolences to her family and to those who feel really close to her family. It is never easy to lose somebody that you love. As the longest reigning British monarch, 70 years, the world has come to know and love Queen Elizabeth. But with that being said, there are still many mixed emotions. In fact, a lot of people of color around the globe are calling to end the British monarchy. And I want to show you why. For many, the monarchy represents colonialism and British imperialism. Only 22 countries have never been invaded by Britain. 22. To be honest, people around the world, especially black and brown people, whose ancestors experienced unspeakable cruelty because of British imperialism, they have every right to feel whatever they may feel. The reality is, many people of color still live with the consequences of the economic exploitation due to the British monarchy. Haiti was invaded by Britain in 1793. During the Haitian Revolution, the leader of the monarchy was King George III, who was Queen Elizabeth's third great-grandfather. King George III saw an opportunity to seize the richest colony in the world, Saint-Domingue, and so he took it. For 5 years, Britain was fighting to take this colony and add it to their empire. This means that our Haitian ancestors had to fight against not only the French and the Spanish, but also the British in order for us to gain independence, for us to gain our humanity back. Even though Haitians won the battle and gained their independence in 1804, the British monarchy refused to recognize Haiti and ostracized Haiti like the other world powers until 1833. If you want to understand more, research British imperialism, and you'll start to see why there are still so many strong emotions. I may have caused some confusion, so allow me to clarify. When I said that people of color have mixed emotions about the death of Queen Elizabeth II, I didn't mean that we don't know how we feel or we have conflicting feelings about her death. What I wanted to communicate is that there's not one shared feeling for all people of color. The emotions vary. They're mixed. Some people could care less. Some people are furious. Some people are sad. The emotions vary. What's clear is that Queen Elizabeth's death is opening up a lot of wounds and traumas, and a lot of people of color are reflecting on the ways that British imperialism has hurt our people. The Queen of England.
There we go. All right. There we have it. So thank you, Sister Bertrude. How y'all say it in English? Doesn't matter. Yeah, thank you, Sister Bertrude, for explaining to these white folks the complex emotions that I feel about the passing of Queen Elizabeth. There's another white lady. I'm going to skip it. I'm going to leave this one in the show notes. This is another white lady. She's her name is Emma. I believe it's M Vexed on TikTok. And I believe she's British, and she shares her thought about the legacy of Queen Elizabeth, and she admits that, yeah, no, she was sad, it was an end of an era, but she recognized that not everyone is, like, in the same boat as her, and what I'm trying to get out is allowing for everyone to feel what they need to feel in that particular moment. That's all I'm trying to get at. I'm not going to show up to her funeral and talk shit about the woman. If someone's having a tea party or watching, really? B, you're going to forget the name of the show? Is watching The Crown, whatever the fuck. I'm not going to interrupt their binge watching session. I'm just saying, look, man, you celebrate, you mourn. And I'll be over there with the black and Irish people talking shit about the death. But talking shit about her death. But anyway, yeah. All right. Keep going. Speaking of queens, yeah. The reason why I'm going with the episode title is because I was I wanted to acknowledge my own queen, Queen Latifah, and my favorite album of hers is Black Rain. It's the one that communicate. I'm not like a diehard fan of Queen Latifah. Like, I don't want to say that came out wrong. I'm saying I'm a fan of Queen Latifah, but I'm saying to me, her most significant album, the one that I have an emotional attached to, is Black Marine album. I remember when it first came out, it was just stuck. It was stuck on my playlist. I even had the tape, and I was listening to it recently because I was trying to figure out a title for this episode, and it hit me, all the songs that I like. Anyways, yeah, No Work, and that doesn't sound like a title for an episode. From Infinity to Infinity, that comes from her song UNITY, and you know, that song, I have like memories attached to this album. I remember when that song came out, and I was, and it reminded me of a relative who, actually a cousin, his girlfriend broke up with him because, you know, she wised up and decided that she deserved better than someone who hits her. And I remember this song was on my cousin's playlist, UNITY. I can't tell you what was going through his mind, but I remember, but it must have reached him. I'd like to believe it reached him, but I remember it was, I don't know if he was listening to the song in shame, or I don't know if he was like, I don't know, but I remember being shocked at the fact that that song was on his playlist. Just Another Day was another powerful hit on that song. Very mellow song that I'm doing a quick album review of my queen, Queen Latifah's Black Marine's album. Weekend Love. Weekend Love has me thinking about, I'm not sure if that song is about cheating or just having someone to, you know, having a, what do you call those, friends with benefit, or just having a relationship during the weekend. But I meant for me, that song had me thinking about how the only time I want to be in a relationship is on the weekend, specifically coming out from a party, drunk and horny, and having someone to, like, it used to bother me leaving the club and seeing everyone all booed up, hugging and kissing, and you know, they're fucking tonight, and I'm going home. barely, just under the legal drink, just barely under the legal drinking. Yeah, cause usually I used to go to parties, drink up, and to find courage to talk to some shorty. But yeah, that didn't work out. Anyway, yeah. So Weekend Love makes me think of all that shit. Boot is right. I think it was the lyric on the. And Black Hand Side, give me 5 on the Black Hand Side. Anyways, yeah, we'll go. Anyway, you know what? I was gonna read off a list of queens to that I want to acknowledge instead of Queen Elizabeth, but instead I'm just gonna put a link in the show notes called the 7 most powerful African queens in history you need to know. But one person who's not on the list, her name is Anna Kona, and I'm just gonna call her the Queen of Haiti. Before that punk-ass bitch, Christopher Columbus, showed up, she was a Taino's queen in Haiti. Basically, she ruled the part of Haiti. That's all you need to know. Before Christopher Columbus fucked it up, she was a queen, and I believe she was one of the people who, like, fought back against them. And so I salute the queens living. I salute all the black queens. And all the queens, okay, black queens in advance, because I'm racist, living, or who have crossed over to the other side, salute from Shut Up Podcast. Be black. All right. Okay. All right. Let's get into this. Okay. Whoa, that was a 20-minute intro. B, man. You suck. Whoa. Okay. Calm the fuck down, man. You know what? I'm this is just me trying to hit the reset button on myself, because the angry thoughts, my the inner critic is fucking with me as I'm recording this episode. And I have this habit of overcomplicating shit, and I'm worried that I've and overcomplicating shit because of perfectionism, and I make things complicated, but the reason I complicate things, it's in the name of perfectionism. This is my attempt to make shit perfect. And I know perfectionism doesn't exist. Why? Because I've been reading the book, The Power of Vulnerability. And I finished it. I just want to applaud myself. You know what? Hold on a second. I just want to put out that I finished the book, The Power of Vulnerability. Yay! Hey, all right, come on. All right, all right, all right, all right. Okay, stay in school, kids. Stay in school. Yeah. I got to acknowledge, because I have this bad habit of not acknowledging my small accomplishments. And no, I won't do a summary of the book in this episode. In a future episode, I will, because I want to give it a summary that does it justice, because it was a powerful book. But there one thought that lingered that I've been thinking about is from the final chapter, the last is called, I think it was, she calls them sessions. They were sessions she was having. But the last chapter in the book, excuse me, I guess I should note that it's the audiobook. I can't find the printed version of it. Oh, shit. The Power of Vulnerability. Did I mention Brené Brown? Brené Brown. I didn't mention her name. Anyways, I'm a fucking student of this woman, of this lady. First it was Stephen Covey. Now I'm like, fuck it. I'm trying to be one of her disciples here. One lingering thought that she left, one takeaway from chapter 6 that I've been thinking about is how there's a part where she's talking about how we value, fuck man, this is why I'm not trying to give a summary, because I'm worried of fucking it up. But long story short, she talks about how much importance we give to what people do, to their work, to their paying gigs. For example, she talks about how when she meets people, just to fuck them up, just not purposely, but she'll say, what do you love? As opposed to asking them, what do you do? That's been I've been thinking of. The reason that part was empowering, because it had me thinking about how, yeah, during my 9-to-5, I'm a fucking public servant, IT nerd, whatever. But that doesn't represent me. The shit that goes on in my work, yeah, no, fuck that. When I think about my life or being on my deathbed, I am not thinking about my coworkers or the motherfucking TPS reports. No, that's not what I'm be thinking about. I'm gonna be thinking about this fucking podcast. Yes. So if you ask me what do I love or what I'm, if you ask me what do I do, I'm gonna tell you podcaster first, comedian second. And then, what do I do for a living? Yeah, fucking, in the government, public servant, IT shit, ET nerd, yeah. Anyway, yeah, skip over. So I'm starting this new book, and it's called Feminism is for Everybody by Bell Hooks. And so right now we're in the This Week in Therapy section of my of the podcast. And usually where I just talk about shit that's going on in my mind, therapy related or whatnot. And I think I'm just going to make it related to the books that I'm, doesn't fucking matter. But this week in therapy, I'm thinking about my journey into feminism, into becoming a feminist thinker. Like, I got to tell you, the first time I saw the title, The Power of Vulnerability by Brené Brown. The first time I saw that title, I was in a unenlightened day. It was during my unenlightened portion of my life where I was like a diehard member of the cult of masculinity, i.e. a toxic male. And I remember my first reaction to that title was, great, another woman is going to tell me to get in touch with my feminine side. Because chicks don't like that shit. They don't want a man who wants to be, you know, they want a real man and shit like that. Yeah, whatever, right? But but today, I went from that guy to the motherfucker who not only heard the TED Talk, but bought the book and re-listening to the book and is trying to figure out how to make a summary of it. But yes, my journey into feminism. And that could be, I don't want to take up a lot of time. You know, I could do a whole episode about that. But I can say that, one, I forgot to add that the book Bell Hooks, by Bell Hook, Feminism Isn't for Everybody, was recommended to me, not by a woman, but by a man. Not to say that a woman, there's likely a woman who would have been glad to recommend that book to me, but I understand, you know, men are not very receptive when it comes to feminism. And the only point I was trying to make by bringing up that a man recommended this book to me, it's just to say, yes, it is true. Men need to talk to other men about feminism. Like, in order for the feminism to move forward, unfortunately, there are things that a man can communicate to another man that a man would be more effective at communicating to another man than a woman would. Because we've been taught to, look, there's a, okay, look, fellas, if you haven't figured that shit out yet, we were all programmed with this us versus them mindset. If you're white, you us is other white people, them is everyone who's not white. If you're a man, us is other males, and them is women. I'm trying to make her life difficult. Just you know, just read the comics. Read the comics. You know, that's usually the idea. Like, oh man, I'm just getting married, so people think I'm a. I'm just saying, we were all raised with this idea of us versus them, and like this notion of men needing to talk to other men about feminism is exactly the same as white people who need to talk to other white people about racism, because there's only so much my black ass can convince, can get across to another white person. Why? Because of this us versus them mentality. So this is where I was going. So a man, shout out to him. I'm gonna call him D because I don't say government names on this podcast. But I'm considering having him on if he's interested to talk about this stuff. But yeah, no. I should mention a white dude. Actually, I should mention two things, right? And this is a fucking confession. I'm ashamed of myself. I actually told all these people not to tell anyone because the black community would hate me for this. But yo, this white boy, his name is D. He's the one who put me on to Bell Hooks' books, Feminism is for Everybody. Just the title alone got the attention I needed. He recommended that book to me a long time ago. Another white boy, homeboy of mine, his name, you probably heard me mention his name before, Jay Little. He's the one who put me on to the name Bell Hooks. What's embarrassing is how that dude, these two dudes are like, you know, they're just on their journey and being better human beings. Like some of us, like the rest of us. I want to say the rest of us, but not all of us are trying to be better human beings. Look, I'm not trying to sound cocky, but I'm just saying, for those of us on a journey to being better than the motherfucker we were, than the person we were yesterday, that's who I'm speaking to. Jay Little put me on to Bell Hooks. And what's funny about Jay Little is he used to, I don't know what happened to him, but he was very versed. He knew a lot of black female writers, feminists, fiction, all of it, whatever, right? And every once in a while, he would, it's like your white friend who discovers hip hop, right? And he just enjoys it, and he's just like dropping titles on me. Hey, you heard of the Wu-Tang, you heard of the LL Cool J, blah blah blah, and stuff like that, right? But when it comes to black female authors, Jesus Christ, how fucking embarrassing! I knew what's homegirl's name from the Black Panther? Not Shirley Chisholm. How embarrassing. I don't know, but she's not known for, she's an activist. She's known for being a, holy fuck, hold on a second. This is embarrassing. Black Panther, female, activist. Fuck, I'm embarrassed, man. Not Asada Shakur. Jesus Christ. Yo, kids, just say no to drugs, man. My brain is all fucked up right now. Oh, by the way, speaking of Angela Davis, Jesus Christ, yeah. Speaking of saluting all my queens, all the queens involved in the Black Panther movements, I see you. Salute to them, too. Right, okay, so he knew, instead of hip-hop, so the Jay Little just knew female authors, and he kept dropping names to me, like, hey, you should follow her on Twitter, and he was following them on Twitter, and he was just recommending names to me, and I was embarrassed. I didn't know who... I didn't know these names. I just knew Angela Davis. I knew Sister Souljah. Look, my list, the list of black women authors that I know, was embarrassing. It was fucking embarrassing. But I remember him saying the name Bell Hooks. And I also remember when she passed away, that was probably another motivation to getting to know her work, was after she passed away, is realizing that, oh shit, we lost a gem. Anyways, yeah. So all this to say, now getting back to my journey into feminism, it's good that I surrounded myself with other males who are feminist thinkers. That's what helps. But when I think about my journey, instead of giving you the whole details, I'm just going to break it down into three chapters. The first time was, I wonder what came first. I mean, I did have a girlfriend who was a feminist. But yeah, she would say a lot of things and it would just go in one ear and out the other. Poor woman, man. Poor her, man. I'm laughing, but yeah, poor her. But yeah, so if I break it down in three chapters, the first event was being at school and hearing about the École Polytechnique massacre. And the word misogyny kept get throwing around. Misogyny kept good for. It was probably the first time I remember hearing the word misogyny during that moment. And I remember after someone gave me the definition, being confused at the definition, I'm like, how can you hate a gender? Like, it didn't make sense at the time. I was a teenager. I didn't know shit. Young, dumb, full of cum. And yeah, the concept of misogyny did not make sense to me, but I felt like a seed was planted at that moment. Now, fast forward, of course, a lot of events went in between, so I'm just giving you the major ones, right? If I had to make a story, the highlights would be that, and then the fast forward to my probably age 30s, and I'm surrounded with men, friends, male friends, who are giving birth, my apologies, sorry, who are raising daughters, all of them, all raising daughters. And I'm thinking specifically of the men who I had an admiration for. Okay, I'm not allowed to admit this. You know, it's not a crush. It's not a romance. But sometimes you just have a male friend that one of the admirations I had for them was their dominant personality, the way they get in your face when they believe something is wrong. It's like, hey, motherfucker, where's my money? You know, just like I don't want to use the term alpha male, but they were just known for not taking any shit. And the idea started to marinate in my head about, like, as I thought about these men and then their daughters and thinking about, holy shit, if their daughters inherit that attitude, I started to think about how they would be vilified further. But I remember, like, it just blew up my mind just thinking of the ideas of their daughters behaving like them and how it would be received by the public, by the general public, right? And the last one, you know what? The last phase of in my journey into feminism was reaching a point where I remember telling myself that I think it was after a relationship. It might have been, I'm not sure, but I remember reaching a point in my life where I gave up on trying to be the quote-unquote real man. Like, I felt like everyone had an input of what a man is supposed to be, and all their inputs shit, my English is as bad as my French now. I can't find words. Mesh. Their definition didn't mesh with who I was as a human being. Like, real men don't cry. Real men aren't sensitive. Real men don't have these moments of introspection and reflection just because their male friend is raising a daughter. You know, like all these things that I do naturally turned out to be shit that real men weren't supposed to do. But once I finally gave up trying to be this real man, like a pimp, a thug, whatever the fuck, man, the seducer, the gigolo, whatever. Once I finally let go of that, it was the beginning of, and it's a mean thing to say, but it was the beginning when I started to acknowledge that I am not treating women like human beings. Like they're, like I'm treating them like there's a, I blame, by the way, patriarchy is to blame for this, but yeah. I'm trying to be a real man, and I'm looking at, and I'm trying to fill in these roles, and the reasons why, yeah, and they're being given these labels and instructions in order for them to be real women, when the fact is, they're just as human being as I am, as, like, they've, by giving up being a real man, I also let go of how a real man perceives women. I guess that's what I'm saying. By deleting that file of real man, it opened up my mind to instead of the way, yeah, the way things are, things should, how do I say it? Things should be? Basically, I just saw things as they were for the first fucking time. That's really what happened. This is where real, and then that's where my growth, I could say, could actually begin, when I finally let go of being a real man. And I gotta tell you, I haven't turned back. There's been a lot of benefit. This is okay. Now I guess I'm not trying to sell you on you doing the same, but I can tell you how significant improvement in my life, because in my quest to being a real man and failing, it created a rage inside me that I held the whole world responsible for. You know, in order for me to be a real man, I need to get bitches. Because I wasn't getting bitches, I'm not a real man, and I'm not a real man because of these bitches. You know what I mean? I'm just saying, there was a rage inside of me caused by this definition of masculinity that I couldn't achieve. And once I finally let it go, let's just say it, life became, I found one less reason to hate life. That's, I guess that's how I could put it. That's how I'll put it. Yeah, man. So that summarizes my journey into feminism. And the other thing too is, and by getting into feminism, I'm introduced to, I've made a lot of, female friends, who not just friends, but found wisdom. Like there was a time where all my wisdom came from men. Now it's like, holy shit, like understanding what a woman goes through to survive in the world that patriarchy that we set up, this unfair, cruel world that we set up for them. Like, look, man, I watched The Crown. I hate to admit this, but I watched The Crown. Sure, The Crown skipped over all the shitty things England did, but I was able to see the world through the eyes of, like, it wasn't an easy journey being the Queen of England. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Especially when motherfuckers are trying to say, hey, you need to six cross-legged tradition, bitch, you can't do this and shit like that. Like I do understand. You know what? Fuck England. Are y'all watching House of the Dragon? At the beginning of this week, oh, that's right, I recorded an episode on Monday, right? And I talked about a black guy on a dragon, and I still haven't gotten over that. That was supposed to be the title of this episode until the queen died. Anyway, yeah, black guy on a dragon yelling Dracarys, but that's not the point. In House of the Dragon, I'm not sure if, I don't know if the word is commentary, but there's a lot of, if you're a man who's a feminist thinker, you're going to enjoy House of the Dragon, because they, how do I say it? They don't preach to you, hey, man, women had it hard. No, they just, by the end of an episode, you see that, oh, wow, being a woman during the medieval time sucked. Even the fictitious, fictional medieval period of time. But I'm just saying, like, it's the resilience. Resilience, the strength, women had to find in order to survive in this fucking cruel world that exists now has inspired me. It's inspired me more than motherfucking John Wayne or whatever, or Tony Soprano, whatever the fuck, man. Like, I found strength in their strength. That's what I'm trying. I found inspiration in the shit that inspires them. That's what I'm trying to say. That's what I'm getting at. All right. Okay, I'm going to conclude this week in therapy and my journey into feminism and jump into random thoughts, because I'm trying to get the fuck out of here. This room is getting hot. All right, okay. First things first. We're going to start off with church wretchedness, and church wretchedness is a segment that I created where I, as an ex-Christian slash preacher's kid, talk shit about the church. Hey, folks, look, man, if you don't want your kids to grow up hating the church, don't force them to go to church, because they'll end up like me. And for those of you from members of the Black Guy Who Tips community listening to the title Church Ratchetness and thinking, hey, you ripped off Sword Ratchetness for them, I want to say this is wrong and remind you that they're McDonald's and I'm McDowell's. All right. Today in Church Ratchetness, I don't even know the name of this pastor, but I heard this sermon and I told myself that I'm just going to play it on the show, and it speaks for itself. All right. No comments. Just another reason to say fuck the church. Here we go. Okay. I'm going to hit mute and hit refresh.
Around with buns on their head.
Hold on a second. Refresh and unmute.
Men don't walk around with buns on their head.
Okay, he starts off with, men don't walk around with buns on their head. That's the sermon. Here, we can keep going.
Oh, y'all don't believe. Because you can't tie it up unless it's too long. And the Bible says it's a shame for a man. Now, y'all act like stuff that I don't say that. The Bible says it's a shame. Look at somebody and say, the Bible says. Now, see, that's the problem. We're so easily offended. Bible says it's a shame for a man. They have long hair. And you can tie your hair up. You got your hair long enough as a man. You can tie it up, twist it, and put it in a bun.
I'm going to hit pause. Are you trying to tell me Jesus walked on earth and never had a man bun? All right, keep going. All right, whatever. How the fuck? I don't know. They didn't have any cameras back then. So how the fuck am I supposed to? But I know that motherfucker, that white boy, had long hair. Keep going.
That ain't gone. Look at somebody and say, that's worldliness. But they on the drums. And then don't let the bun come loose. And then they want everybody to see their hair. They got to pull. They on.
You know, I'm going to stop it. It's getting ridiculous. This was just my fuck the church reason 4,086 while I'm on this fuck this church ship. Exactly. This motherfucker got on the pulpit. I guess he had no material. There was starvation, poverty, inflation, all the challenges of the world. No, this motherfucker felt the need to preach about men who put their hair in a bun. And what I like is how he was able to use the Bible creatively in a way to be able to justify his sermon, which makes my point that, yo, you can use the Bible to justify it, to say any fucking thing. Anything. My toilet's not flushing. Bible says the toilet shall flush. Thou shalt not have an unflushed toilet. Whatever the fuck, man. I'm just saying, it's some bullshit. No, I'm some bullshit. All right. Okay, this ends church ratchetness. Let's move on to, this happened on the weekend. What the fuck did I write? All right, so, because I don't think I have the correct spelling of his name. Excuse me. His name is Pierre. This is Canadian politics shit right now. Excuse me. Poilievre in English. And long story short, Pierre Poilievre won the, is basically the new leader of the Conservative Party. For those of you who don't live in Canada, what the fuck does that mean? Well, it's kind of like, remember Donald Trump? He's like our Donald Trump. Like, but he's like worse than Donald Trump. I think that homie's broke. Whatever. But Trump is broke too. But he was the guy no one thought could win because he was saying stupid shit. because he was hanging out with racist people. He was unapologetically white. And yeah, man, homeboy became the new leader of the Conservative Party. I remember sleeping on this guy the same way I slept on Trump. But the difference with Trump is I didn't think it was going to happen. With him, it's more I didn't want to believe it was going to happen. But yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, he became the new leader of the Conservative Party. And it's just a sign that Canada, there's a portion of Canadians who really, really, really want this, really want white people to have this dirt country back. Like, who really feel like they're losing. We're losing everything. We're losing everything. I'm imitating Chris Rock here. We're in one of his bits, white people complain about losing everything. Like, white people can't use the word the N-word anymore. And it's like, we're losing everything. Fuck, some bullshit. Fuck. Martin Luther King died for nothing. Anyway, yeah. yeah, pop. Anyway, yeah. The only thing I'm going to say about him winning is I'm wondering when all those people, when some of those people, when the people came to vote for the guy, how many of them were motivated by all the shit people were saying about the queen, about the death of the queen? How many of them were there? Oh, those fucking colors need to be put in their place. Put your for prime minister. Vote for him. Yeah, whatever. Anyway, yeah. Some people are saying that, you know, this motherfucker can't win. But yeah, that's exactly what we said about Trump. Yeah, man. Dear liberals, dear NDP, don't fuck this up, man. Don't do some stupid shit that's going to cause your voters to not show up to the voting booth. Shout out to Hillary Clinton. I'm not dissing her. It's a shame that she lost. I didn't think she was gonna lose, but turns out motherfuckers rather a lot of people didn't show up to the voting booth. A lot of people who would have had her back just didn't show up to the voting booth because in their fucking mind they fucking let Trump convince them that she was just a bad person, bad enough for them to not vote at all. Like, he was able, man, okay, you know what? There's a clip about Trump about, you know, that dude is a genius con man. That's really what I'm trying to get at. We need to, I don't like the dude, but we need to acknowledge that when it comes to being a fucking con, Trump's got it in the fucking bag. But anyway, we'll get to that. All right, so yeah, I wonder how many people are just pissed. We're in a moment and they were like, yo, how dare you disrespect my queen? Vote Poilievre. That shit was funny. Yeah. All right. Speaking of Chris Rock, nice segue. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this. Long story short, Chris Rock was reported of saying in response to Will Smith's apology, fuck your hostage video. Chris Rock issues a sweary response to Will Smith. Now, I want to be to Will Smith's filmed apology. Now, I want to be clear that, hey, you know what? Is there a highlight? Because I'm not going to, okay. It goes, Chris Rock has denounced Will Smith's apology for slapping him at the Oscars in July at the Hollywood actor who struck Rock. Okay, you know what? I think Chris Rock just said that. Sorry, this wasn't like a, what do you call that? The press conference by Chris Rock. It was just, he was at one of his show and the word came out of his mouth. Man, fuck your hostage. What's the word he called it? Your hostage video. And now, if you remember, I can't remember which episode I did this on. Is I dedicated some time on the apology by Will Smith. And this ain't taking sides. Who was right? This is not about this. It's more reacting to the event and how it's making me think about shit. Well, one for Chris Rock. I ain't mad at the guy. Look, man, homeboy was humiliated. I don't know what his relationship is with Will Smith, but I get the feeling he ain't feeling his own journey to go through before look, I'm just saying, I'm no better than Chris Rock. If I was in his shoes, I'd be fuck that nigga Will Smith for life. I'd be like Tupac. Diss record every day. Until I die. talking about, well, boom, boom, fuck you, die slow. Anyway, yeah. My foe, make sure all your kids don't grow. Anyway, yeah. Yeah, no, I was just thinking about, this is the thought that was going through my mind, is after Will Smith's apology video, it looks like he's slowly trying to get back into his regular ways of joking on the internet. He's probably trying to retain his image, trying to get back his image of being that clean-cut guy or that funny guy online. And I'm watching these videos of Will Smith, I guess, trying to move on from the situation. And it reminded me of after a breakup with a girlfriend, and I'm mad at her because she dumped me. And she was a shitty girlfriend during the relationship. I should have been the one to dump her. But I remember being in that moment, and the girlfriend was like, had moved on, and she's trying to get her life back. And the whole time, all I wanted was the whole world to join me in hating this person. But the reality is, I don't know what it's like to be in their shoes. Like after you fuck up, after you know you fucked up, after you took the time to say, I'm sorry, what next? What do you do next? Do you stay in a hole? Do you continue to hate yourself for fucking up? Do you, look, don't get me wrong, I still haven't forgiven the ex for dumping me. But I get the whole moving on. Now, with that said, with Chris Rock, I'm in his shoes looking at this. Look at this motherfucker. Specs me on television, disrespects me, puts out an apology video to gain some love back. But I'm still, what about me? This is not me saying faulting Chris Rock or any way. I'm just saying I can understand being in his shoes and being like, yo, fuck your apology, man. Fuck. Maybe you probably did that for entertainment value for, you know, because you do have a movie coming out and you kind of trying to get your money going again. But for me, that shit ain't right. Because, yeah, like, you know, there's a lot of talk about, okay, you know, I'm spending way too much time on this shit. About, yeah, I don't want to spend much time on it except just to say that in Chris Rock's word, I'm not saying he should have said, fuck your hostage video, but I am saying I understand. All right, wrap it up, B, wrap it up. All right, okay. I was talking earlier about how Trump is a great con artist. I'm going to play a clip by, I forget her name. Today is just a series of clips that I've just heard on the internet, and I'm just going to play for you, right? She's a very famous, you know what? I'm sure you know her, but I'm going to get her name from the clip. Look, man.
Let's work from the premise that Donald Trump is completely innocent. Let us begin.
Hold on a second. I feel the need to give you her name. Her name is...
Let's work...
Political Girl... Is that Politics Girls? Add the Politics Girl podcast for more. I got it from Media Touch. Okay, hold on a second. Her name is, I believe, Yes. The Politic Girl podcast. American Democracy is, I'm trying to find the name of a person. See, I have this habit. I watch movies and say, fuck the name of the actors or just call them by their, and I'm trying to get out of this bad habit. But I guess... Oh, no, that belongs to the Politics Girl podcast. Lee McGowan, is that her name? Leah McGowan. Fuck, these Anglais. I think her name is... I don't think her name is Leah McGowan. Is that her? Jeez. All I know is this woman is very famous, shows up a lot on my timeline, says some smart shit, And I never got her name. Oh, I think that's her. Yeah, Leah Elliott McGowan. I think that's her. Yeah, it is her. Sorry. I'm looking at pictures of a white lady. And I'm like, yeah, it is her. All right. Okay. B, shout out to me, man. Hold on a second. All right. Breaking out of the habit of not acknowledging content owners' names. All right. Yay! You're welcome. Stay in school, kids. All right. I need to give this lady her full props before I play her content. I frequently see her on my timeline, on my Twitter timeline, and I hit play, and she always says some wise shit regarding respect to politics, especially about Trump, some fuck Trump shit. Now, She's going to say something that just made me think, damn, Trump is such a fucking great con artist. All right? And here goes.
Okay. Let's work from the premise that Donald Trump is completely innocent.
Let's go.
Let us begin from the starting point that Trump is a completely innocent billionaire who is an amazing president, a brilliant businessman, and is being unfairly targeted by an overzealous, corrupt Justice Department.
Pause. I'm going to hit pause just to say it. Let's pretend. Use your imagination. All right? If you're one of those people who can't imagine a black guy on a dragon, then you're going to have the difficulty with this segment, right? But use your imagination and let's pretend that Trump is all the things that she just described. All right? All right. Let's go.
Let's just say all of that is true, which I believe is what some people feel. If that is the case, then where are his lawyers? I don't mean the ex-OAN host supermodel he met at Mar-a-Lago or the ex-Bannon low-level defense lawyer he hired without meeting, both who are now in legal trouble themselves. I mean, where are the top-of-their-class Harvard Law School defense attorneys out of New York or Dallas or Miami or Los Angeles? I mean, this is a high-profile client, a Republican billionaire ex-president. Who wouldn't want to represent him? Mm-hmm. Especially if you're working from the premise that he is completely innocent and the subject of a gross overstep by the FBI, and there is endless proof that everything he's done is completely justified.
Right.
Where is the crack legal team? Mm-hmm. Where are the firms charging thousands of dollars an hour? He should have the best legal minds in the country tripping over themselves to represent him. Mm-hmm. Where is the team put together from the Federalist Society lawyers? Leonard Leo and Donald Trump had a deal. They support him to become president, and they get to pick all of his justices, including the three Supreme Court picks. Mm-hmm. Being the frontrunner for the Republican nominee for president should give Trump first draft pick of any top-notch conservative lawyer he wants. So where are they?
Where are they?
There was a period of time just after the 2020 election when he was represented by a great firm in New York, but they quit before they took his stolen election case to court. That's how we ended up with Jenna Ellis and Rudy Giuliani. No one else would do it. Why not? Who doesn't want to represent the President of the United States? Especially if there's tons of evidence proving his case. Careers are made on such high-profile wins. So where are the conservative Republican bulldog defense attorneys? Where is Trump's Johnny Cochran saying, if it doesn't fit, you must acquit? People represent guilty murderers all the time for profit and high-profile wins. Which lawyer turns away a rich, innocent, high-profile client? It's a legitimate question. Because no matter what you hear on TV or Truth Social or Facebook or from Trump himself about planted evidence and a corrupt FBI or declassified information, ask yourself, then where are the lawyers? Because if everything Trump and his defenders have said is true, then there would be a line around the block to represent him, but no one is there. So next time you go to defend him, ask yourself why no one who would make money from doing the same thing will take the job. Because I think that tells you everything you need to know.
Yay! I gotta work on my timing. Shout out the sound pad. Anyway, yeah. Again, not gonna focus a lot of time on this shit. I'm just going to say, look, if you've ever been a victim of a con, you're going to be familiar with how the con artist manages to put, is it smoke and mirrors? Is that the expression? Manages to get you to not think about what you should be thinking about. Like the fact it took this content creator on Twitter for me to think about this shit had me thinking about, holy fuck. Like the way Trump goes about it, he nearly has me convinced that, yo, he's the victim. He's this rich billionaire and fucking liberal media is out to get him. The government is trying to get, like, he's a bigger victim of the presidency than Obama was. But that's what I'm saying is, if you've ever been a victim of a con, if you've ever took the time to realize, okay, how did I fall for this shit? Then you think about all the con artists you've dealt with and you compare them to Donald Trump, like you see the similarities and you see the, okay, damn, Donald Trump, okay. He's good. He's like, fuck, if we're going to give him a peace, if you're going to give him a Nobel Peace Prize, give him for his ability to be a fucking con artist, man, and being a cult leader. Now, it's kind of scary, because I don't know where, because there's some motherfuckers willing to die for this asshole, and which is kind of dangerous. But then again, I don't know if Osama bin Laden was as great a con as Trump. Because Osama bin Laden convinced Is it 11? How many passengers? Oh, fuck, a 9-11. Was it 11? How many fucking... Basically, he convinced some motherfuckers to get on some plane and crash that shit into the World Trade Center. Well, two of them went into the World Trade Center. He got them to train. He got them to forgive pussy, to forgive women. Osama bin Laden is the biggest pimp that I know, because he said, yo, you know what's better than pussy? Afterlife pussy. You want the pussy in the afterlife. You want 72, you want pussy from 72 virgins, all right? Now, in order to get that pussy, I need you to crash some planes, to hijack some planes, so we can make a message, so we can send a message to these fucking Yankees that they'll remember forever. I'm just saying, Trump is a fucking great con artist. That's what I'm trying to get at. All right. Okay, we're getting close to the end here. Two more segments, and then I'm out. Then we're out. Then, by the way, all these content that I'm playing on here is available on my show notes. All right, this last one that I'm going to play. No, excuse me. Before two more shit to go through. Two more things to go through. It's on the concept of the attention economy, and I got this from TikTok. And again, I didn't take the time to remember the name of the content creator. Hold on a second. Hold on. Thank you. I can hit reply. Hit pause. Putain merde. Okay. His name is Thomas McGullen. McGullen TV at McGullen TV. At McGullen.tv. All right. And there's a concept he talks about is the attention economy. And I'm just going to play it. And let this be a message for you or thought for you. When you're spending a lot of time, like I do, surfing through social media. Here we go.
Hold on. Fear-inducing headlines, the culture. The internet was made to keep you angry. Fear-inducing headlines, the culture war.
Okay, he said the internet was made to keep you angry. Actually, it was made for porn. All right, okay, I'm gonna keep going. Okay, no, sorry, that was an inside joke for us nerds, but all right. Back to Thomas McGowan.
The internet was made to keep you angry. Fear-inducing headlines, the culture wars, the division, the finger-pointing, the comment crusaders, the public meltdowns. It all comes down to one thing. Facebook knows it, news stations know it, and public figures know it too. And the strategy behind it was intentionally designed like that for one specific reason, at the cost of your mental well-being. Now let me explain. Humans spend an average of 7 hours of their day staring at a screen, with millions of different apps, websites, channels, and creators all fighting for your attention, with one common goal, to keep you looking for as long as possible, before you scroll off to the next thing. This is what's known as the attention economy, where our receding attention spans are the greatest currency. And do you want to know the best way to get and keep someone's attention? Anger them. Outrage can be engineered, manufactured, and promoted at the expense of the audience because it's a surefire way to drive user engagement, which is where the term rage profiteer comes in. A rage profiteer is a creator or journalist or politician who pretends to care passionately about certain causes, but in fact thrives on regression, controversy, or bad news because it gives them an excuse to step into the limelight. Now, I didn't have to name you any names or show you any pictures, but I'm sure someone came to mind for you. Be careful of falling into that trap. But this runs quite deep, and even political parties in Europe spoke out against Facebook because they had to change their ads to be more negative in order to get picked up by the algorithm. And while getting people angry or anxious might be a great way to get attention and drive engagement, it's obviously having a really negative impact on society, so what do we do? The simple answer would be to turn it off or ignore it, but we know it's not that simple. Technology is only going to get more prevalent in the coming years, and the war for attention is only going to get more saturated. All you can really do is be aware of how the people feeding you content operate, and don't sacrifice your mental well-being for someone else's gain. The internet was made.
There we go. Beautiful. Now, the only reason, I think there's a lot to take away from this message, from this clip. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. I'm trying to get away, and fucking TikTok just showed me a picture. Like, there's a list of suggested account, and it just showed me this woman with, I'm not going to say her name, but I just got distracted. That's what I'm trying to say. You know, fuck. Oh my God, attention economy, yes. There's a part where he talks about rage profiteers, and I wanna be clear, if you're listening to this podcast just to allow yourself to be angry by the shit that I say, like fuck the queen, fuck Whitey, or whatever the fuck, if your only motivation, cause there's people who just love misery. I knew this Trump supporter, or these right winger types, whatever, right? And these motherfuckers would go on online dating sites to find liberal women to date. And I don't know if they're idea was to, you know, this is like their equivalent of changing a babble. I'm going to change her or whatever. But they would always bitch about the opinion of these ladies. And it's as if they were enjoying the conflict that they put themselves in, which is, it's fucked up. It's fucked up, bottom line. Yeah, man. But I'm just saying, when I said fuck the queen at the beginning of the episode, it was not to profit off people's rage. It was speaking my own truth. It's speaking from a place of my own truth. Now, if you allow my truth to let you get angry, as opposed to maybe trigger a conversation, you know what? I'm at the phase in the podcast where I'm not really into it. I'm not trying to get things too serious. I'm not really looking for a real relationship right now. I'm trying to engage my audience. I'm just trying to get myself to a phase where I can speak my truth and not give a fuck. But I'm just saying, homeboy had me thinking about people who put out content with the express, with the intention of pissing people off, so that it will create an engagement. But that's interesting, man. Another thing had me thinking about is the thought that I had, like, this world that we live in, if it's not trying to kill you, it's trying to drive you insane. And fucking media, social media especially. Oh, man, yeah, definitely. All right, okay. All right, okay, that's it. All right, so the last segment is I gotta send a shout out to the name, to the, well, first of all, I'm gonna send a shout out to Irish Twitter and Irish Black Twitter, who came together in unification to talk shit about the death of the Queen. Like, I knew the Irish had beef with the English. I just wasn't clear on the details, all the details. I mean, I knew, you know, but I just love how we had something in common. I think the French people too, but they don't talk about that a lot, man. Like, when I say French, I mean, I don't French. I mean, de la France, from France, yeah, definitely. But French Canadians, man, there was a white dude at my work who, when he heard about the Queen dying, he got into this whole, yeah, talk positive about her legacy, and I thought that was kind of fucking disrespectful on his part, like, for the people. Well, I mean, he's white. He's a white Canadian. He doesn't know any world outside of his own, so he thinks everyone else shares in his sentiment. But a part of me wanted to jump in and be like, fuck this job and fuck this cracker. And be like, hey, fuck you and your queen, man. None of us are, you know, I'm glad the bitch is dead, you know. But that would have probably got me fired. And I think there's something I signed in the rule book in like being a public servant that I wouldn't talk shit about the queen. I just thought that I got an exempt status for being, you know, for growing up with French Canadians. Because French Canadians don't swear to the queens, do they? They shouldn't have to. Anyways, I'm off topic, right? So yeah, the Irish. Shout out to the Irish, because I see the similarity in their struggle. It bothers me to see a racist Irish, but when I see a racist Irish, I always look at them and I say, you don't represent Ireland. Anyway, so I discovered the name. Actually, this is one of those situations where I've seen this quote that I'm about to read and just never knew the name of the author. And the author's name is Bernadette Devlin. Who's Bernadette Devlin? Okay, I made sure to put that in my bookmark. Bernadette Devlin is Josephine Bernadette McAliski? Tabarnak. Fuck. Usually known as Bernadette Devlin or Bernadette McAliski. Fuck, man, I can't read this shit. He's an Irish civil rights leader and former politician. She served as a member of Parliament, MP for Mid-Ulster in Northern Ireland from 1969 to 1964. All right, the reason I salute this my Irish sibling over here is because of this quote that she read, that she wrote, and she said, brace with me because I read at a sixth grade level. I don't, my brain, okay, I'm going to try here. It goes, those who supposed to be my people, quote unquote, my people, the Irish Americans, who knew about English misrule and the famine and supported the civil rights movement. Okay, one more time. Okay, those who were supposed to be my people, the Irish Americans, who knew about the English misrule and the famine and supported the civil rights movement at home and you that partition and England were the cause of the problem, they said exactly the same things about blacks that the loyalists say about us at home. Quote unquote. My people, the people who knew about oppression, discrimination, prejudice, poverty, and the frustration, and the frustration and the despair that they produced, were not Irish Americans. They were black Puerto Ricans, Chicanos. In New York, I was given the key to the city by the mayor, an honor not to be sneezed at. I gave it to the Black Panthers. Bernadette Devlin Barn, 23 April 1947. So yes, I remember reading that, and I don't think she's the first text. Basically, Irish activists who were able to empathize with the struggles of Black Americans. And I'll be honest, when it comes to oppression, I don't think there should be any nationality. We're all one big family, victims of oppression. White people like to play this game of who was more oppressed. When I say white people, I'm talking about the people who benefited from oppression. Like to talk shit about, oh, this group was more oppressed than that group. Now, when it comes to oppression, we're one big miserable family. I was going to say happy family, but one big fucking family. And I love reading those words by this sister because it just reminded me that we're just one big miserable family under the yoke of oppression of a fucking white man. Everybody's okay. All right. Yeah. So I'm going to, Oh man. Very expensive mic. Sorry. I should have got an extended warranty on that shit. Anyway. Yeah. I'm going to end it with that. Shout out to Benedict Devlin. All the queens who have gone unnoticed. And you know what? I'm going on too long. But that's it, man. That's it. The show is done. We're done, man. We're ending this show. Do I end my week with a podcast or do I end my week with House of the Dragon? Doesn't fucking matter. But this concludes today's episode. Holler at me on Twitter at B Blizzak. My name is B Blizzak. I hate saying at B Blizzak. But yeah, on Twitter, it's B Blizzak. My website is shutuppodcast.com. Email address is shutuppodcast411@gmail.com. And until further notice, subscribe to the podcast using the RSS feed. Thank you for listening. And remember, be kind to your favorite podcasts.